All right, everybody, let's welcome to the pod one of my favorite teammates of all time, soon to be Basketball Hall of Famer, Stephen John Nash. Welcome, brother.
Thanks for the formality there, the middle name, full first name. It's rare. I like it.
Anyway, bro, it's been a while. We've texted a little bit, but you know, congrats on all the success, the family, the soccer broadcast, everything. But first and foremost, like, how does it feel to be a Hall of Famer, man? Talk to me.
I mean, you know, it's like one of those things. It's not like even, like, I don't even think you'd ever dream of that as a kid. You know, you dream of, like, you know, playing in college or playing in the pros or being an all-star or something. But, you know, that's like, I don't know. It's beyond like the dreams you have as a kid. And to actually kind of, to be there makes me feel like realize how much life has passed, one.
Right.
Which isn't like, I don't know if that's like the, you know, the best outcome of it, but it's like, wow, a lot of stuff's happened. Here I am.
Right.
And, but the positive is that, you know, like I've said this a few times, but, you know, that someone told me when I was in high school, you know, there's going to come a day where they don't ask you back, where they say, like, you're not good enough to play anymore in high school, college, pros, whatever it is. And this is kind of like the last stop. Like, I kind of made it all the way to the end of the train, so to speak, as basketball players go. And to be recognized in that way, to get into that group is I don't know. It's like the weirdest thing, because people have been telling me that it's going to happen for a few years. And at the same time, it's unfathomable. So it's just one of those weird things that I'm still trying to wrap my head around. And at the same time, I don't really spend much time thinking about it, but I'm very honored.
Yep. There is something you have to think about, though. It'll be your speech. Like, are you excited about getting up there and kind of talking about your career and, you know, talking about some of the people that influence you? Do you get nervous about giving a speech like that with that much importance?
This,
like,
guy loves how to hear himself talk.
Oh, he does.
He's fine. He's fine.
I mean, I have been known to go over how much stuff is. I think when the Suns retire my jersey, they got a call from the league the next day saying, like, you got to keep these half times. So, like, you know, under 25 minutes or whatever it was. But to be honest with you, the speech gives me anxiety. Like, I was like, oh, man, do I have to go in the Hall of Fame? Just because I was nervous about making a speech in front of, like, all those Hall of Famers. And I don't know, like, Roger, do you feel, I don't know, when you're around, like, if you ever see, like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Oscar Robertson or something, like, in your career, is it always kind of like, I don't know, I always feel, like, nervous around them.
Yeah, complete reverence. Like, no, real,
seriously. You're just like, you know, so even though it's like, you know, they probably don't even pay too much mind to it, you're still always kind of like, ah, God, I got to speak in front of these guys. I'm going to make myself like a complete ass. It's once in a lifetime chance to, like, you know, it's not like I'm going to get a redo. So I got to admit, I was a little anxious about that, but I'm sure I'll have a couple cocktails and it'll come out.
It'll all be good. Trick. Hey, let me ask you, man, because, like, the babies, right? Like, Lola and Bella, and they were so young when we were around, like, back in those Phoenix years. Do they know, like, I find my kids, like, they don't know dad as a competitor. They just know dad. Do your kids,
right,
you know, do they have any idea of what you were able to accomplish and who you were as a player? Like, do they ever ask you about it? Or Mateo, is he curious? Mm-hmm. Or?
Yeah. No. they know, because people stop you on the street all the time, and so they, and then you go to, like, the Suns Ring of Honor, or, you know what I mean, they hear about the Hall of Fame thing. But, like, I never stopped to talk to them about it, and so we never had that conversation, and they've never asked, but they know, just because people stop you on the street and people at school, you know, mention things or whatever, or, you know what I mean, like, socially they're used to it, but they don't know, like, more than that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it must, I don't know. Your boys have got to be coming because they play.
These guys are good ballers, I mean, too. Yeah.
Really good.
No, yeah. No, but I understand what you said. They live in the world of basketball a little bit more because they're in the gyms and stuff like that.
My daughters still think I was good. I'm waiting for that moment when they realize how they can Google stats and be like, no. Oh, he wasn't any good.
No. That never has to change. Just tell them the advanced analytics era, what your stats nowadays would mean a lot. You'd be rich.
That's right.
By the way, congrats on the new little one. I can hear him in the background.
Yeah, apologies for that. But he's like, I think as soon as I start talking to someone else, he's like, you know, what the? Can I get some attention over here? So now he's chatterboxed. But Thank you. I appreciate it. We're lucky. He's an amazing little guy, happy and healthy. So we're thrilled.
The Charity Shield event and tournament in New York City this weekend. What's going on with that?
Yeah. So my foundation's had, it's no secret now that I love soccer and grew up playing soccer, but we've had this charity soccer game. Rogers played in a couple times with NBA players and international soccer stars. And we added another event, a Charity Shield, which is like a five-a-side tournament. So like 100 people can sign up. You guys ever heard of like a Calcutta format?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I don't know if this is a true Calcutta format, but they rank everybody an A, B, C, D, or E player. And then they give every team an A, B, C, D, and E. So to try to create some parity. And then tonight, at the Gem Pub, we're going to have like an auction. So donors can come and buy a team. If your team wins, you know, you kind of like double your money, so to speak. So it's a little bit of fun. You know, it's cool. We got a few pros coming to play and just people basically coming, hanging out, having a tournament, some food, some beers, and then doing it for a good cause. So we're just, I mean, Roger knows me. Anytime we can put soccer, beer, good cause in the same sentence, it's a win.
It's so a win, 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 bro.
It's a triple win.
Your soccer skills are like well known out there, but I didn't realize how good they were. There's the promo that's going out there because some of your work you're going to do with Turner Sports and Bleacher Report covering soccer. There's a promo out there where you take it off the chest and you take it straight out of the air and you kick like a laser like into the goal. How many takes did that take?
It actually took a bunch of takes because my cousin, Ezra, who, Roger knows, we were stupid enough to have him serving the ball to me with his hands. I mean, he couldn't catch a cold. So he couldn't throw the ball anywhere near where, you know, we were asking him to. So we were out there rolling our eyes, like, really my bad for putting him in that position. But, yeah, it took us a minute. But as far as the skills, you know, I got a little something.
Yeah. You can see it.
What? So, like a lot of people, I mean, the backstory in terms of like your family and athletically, like your dad and your brother and what was, you know, I have three boys now and I'm raising them trying to be in an athletic environment and let them find their footing. What was your upbringing like in terms of sports? Like was your dad a soccer first guy? Was it pretty much, hey, whatever you like to do, like you guys got to do? What was it like?
Yeah. My dad loves sports. He played professional soccer. Semi-pro, grew up in London, played like really low semi-pro there. Then he went to South Africa for a couple of years. I was born there. He played professionally there. But he just loved sports. So he wanted us to play and try everything. He never was like, you really need to stick to soccer or whatever it was. So I grew up playing soccer with my dad in the backyard, but he'd also take us to play tennis or golf or, you know, we played hockey, we played baseball. You know, he knew nothing about any of these sports. The only sport I didn't play growing up was basketball. But we grew up in an environment where it was like, you know, we were always playing, always in the backyard. My dad was always taking us to games, different sports. And so a complete sporting environment. My dad was a total sportsman, taught us a lot, you know, just about the characteristics of being fair and working hard and like just, you know, being an honest pro in a sense, like not even though we were kids, you never used the word pro, but like don't cheat, you know, don't cheat the system, work hard and enjoy it at the same time and play everything you can and all those things. So I definitely grew up in a great environment to play sports.
All right. So we've gotten to know our guy Raja here for about 6 months. We've been working with him, doing the podcast. We need some dirt, like, because he's a great dude. We're having some fun. I don't know if you know this, Steve, but he actually got kicked out of a high school basketball game for arguing with the officials. He had to take an anger management course to get back on the court. Like, so we know about.
Ask me if I'm shocked.
Not one bit is my guess. What's your favorite Rajah Bell story?
God, I should have thought of some dirt, you know, like this is a perfect time.
Oh, this is great.
Throw him under the bus, just bury him. You know, the truth is I can't off the top of my head, you know, one of my best friends in my career, we had a blast. Our families hung out. I was there for the birth of, I think, both boys.
Yeah, well, both of them. Yep.
They were born in Phoenix. I mean, to see Dia on, and I'm taking it aside. Car here, but to see Dion and the boys on Instagram, like the skills they have in basketball is like amazing to me. You know, to think I was there, they're born, you know what I mean? These little tiny things. And now like it's crazy. So, I mean, I miss the Bell family. I miss all the times we had on the bus, the plane, in practice, you know, when it gets chippy and everyone's barking at each other and all those days, you know, they'll always look back and think about how much fun we had. And so, you know, like, I mean, as you know, like, there's nothing like at the end of your career to look back and think about the people that you got to travel around the country with and compete with, and to have people like Raja, you know. Oh, it was like, here goes the little guy crying. Perfect.
Yeah,
we're cracking anyway, up here.
Did you guys ever scrap? Like in practice, did you ever get after?
He wants to be on Bell and Canal.
Yeah, like, that's right. Welcome, Luca.
He's okay. I'm smart enough to know that I don't really have a chance against Ra-Ra, so I never really I tried to stay on his good side. But I mean, I think we had a lot of competitive practices. We were usually on the same team, but man, it was just so much fun. And I always got a kick out of. I love competing myself, but I love the edge that Roger played with. And you know, like clothesline and Kobe, I mean, absolutely ridiculous at the same time. As a teammate, beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, you know, like you're in this deep, you know, rivalry, playoff battle. And, you know, when he did it, I was like, I couldn't believe it because of what moment it was. And at the same time, I was like, absolutely saw that coming. You know what I mean? I was like, so like to have a teammate like that and who was always up for, you know, the physical stuff and to compete and to put his mark on a game or a series was something that was so valuable to our team and something that I personally, you know, really appreciated because, you know, like at the end of the day, we're not all like that. You have teams that might have a lot of skill or athleticism, but to have guys in your lineup that will stand up for your team or take a stand, that does mean something. I mean, you don't necessarily always need it to end the way, you know, the clothesline ended, but at the same time, it does, I think, give your team an edge and give your team an ability to win certain battles that aren't even physical, just mental battles. So, but I mean, I'm kind of straying here.
Enough about me.
Some
bro.
Of the funnest years of my career.
enough about me. Let's talk about you. Let's come on.
I mean, a lot of compliments for Roger right now. I kind of feel soft.
I appreciate the locking of the lips. Like these guys come on and they think they're
so
gonna like.
I so badly what wanted the, some dirt, like, but what do it's you okay. Think this I is? Appreciate it.
So point guard position, Steve, way different than probably, you know, how you were taught to play the position. You know, I'm working with high school kids now, and you know, trying to teach the game from a place, you know, a pure place where we put stock in the things that we think are important. But the game is changing, and the point guard position specifically is being played completely different. Like, what do you think your game would have looked like had you been bred in like today's climate of point guard play? Like, would you still be a pass first guy? Would you have taken it upon yourself to shoot the ball more? Like, where do you think your game would fit in with today's PGs?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean this to pat myself on the back. I just mean this on a, like what would it kind of look like? I think it would have been a little bit more towards the way Steph plays. You know, just like more aggressive to shoot the ball. Like, I think if I made a mistake in my career that I didn't shoot enough, but, and I'm interested to hear how you approach it with young PGs, but you're right. It's changed. And we know now that if you're, you know, a 40% 3-point shooter and 50% field goal guy, you know, you should be jacking that thing. So like, it's, you know, it's just better for your team and for the numbers analytically to shoot. Having said that, you know, there is something to be said for being a leader and, you know, being a playmaker, making your teammates feel, you know, a part of things as much as giving them easy opportunities. So I still believe that, you know, I would have been who I was. I would have definitely, you know, I just like to see other people succeed. You know, I don't know why or where that comes from, but forever since I was a little kid in hockey, soccer, whatever sport it was, I always liked to pass and liked to see my teammates do well. And right. So that would have persisted, I think, but I definitely would have shot the ball more. The game has changed for sure. I think it's rightfully changed. There's probably a balance in there, but it depends on your personality. If your personality is to be aggressive and score, there's nothing wrong with having a, you know, 5'10", 6'4" guy that's your lead guard,
you know, try to get downhill or try to get free and shoot and put pressure on the defense. How do you approach it with these kids?
You know, it's funny. It's funny because Dia, is wired a lot like I imagine you were, where he wants to see everybody else like succeed. And it like people like to play with him for that reason, because his inclination, the first thing he wants to do is get you a bucket, to a fault. Like, you know, right. sometimes I'll have to have the conversation, and I'm trying to teach him that, you know, your job is to do what the team needs from that position. So, you know, if it's, you can make a play and then you can serve, you know, our wing or our big and you can get him a bucket and that's great. But if, you know, circumstances dictate, then you need to score. And so we're working on him being more aggressive now because, you know, you've gotta be able to, for instance, if, you know, I thought the beauty of your game, Steve, was like when people chose to play our pick and roll and suck in and take away you and Amari or Sean at the rim, well, you know, we all got to eat. But there were teams that would just dare you to try to get 40. And in that scenario, you get 40. And so, like, that's the conversation I'm having with him. Like, look, you have to be able to do both. So if you come out and you set the tone and we're scoring and they're going to let you score, then we're doing that. But if they're going to take that away and it becomes a challenge and it opens something else up, then you got to be head up, ready, willing, and able to get off the ball and make everybody else a threat. So, you know, I'm trying to make them more balanced. I think that's the word I would use, right? Like, I want them to be balanced. I want all of them to be balanced.
I think that's smart. I mean, it's about being basketball players. I mean, because not every guy is going to be, you know, a great, dominant kind of player. So to have that, even the NBA, to go, you know, sideways a little bit, to have a second side pick and roll player, a second side passer, even a three or four that can show it, you know, show a shot fake, put it on the floor, and make a pass, is so valuable. So just for guys to be able to learn how to play at a young age. But for point guards, I do think the key is being aggressive and putting pressure on the defense. I mean, I always tell young players that for me, I always, you know, as I evolved as a player, I tried to use my passing to open up space to shoot and my scoring ability to open up passing lanes. So to always put the defense in that position where they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. And if you can walk that line where no matter what, you know, what each possession presents, but you're being aggressive and you're ready to take whatever that is. And, you know, that's the way I played. I just think today I probably would have looked to score a little bit more, but I wouldn't have necessarily swung all the way, but definitely would have realized there's benefits to being more aggressive, especially from three.
Yep. Hey, so Mike and Chris Paul, right? Like, cause Chris is one of those point guards that I think is kind of a tweener in terms of generationally. Like I think he's scoring the ball a bit more, but I think his true heart is serving others too and getting off the ball. And then, you know, he's had his postseason like failures as has Mike. And I'm watching that Houston team, and I know you've got an affiliation there to Golden State, but I think Houston's a real threat. So like, what do you see with Mike? Talk to me about, I've made my case for why I loved Mike and his style on the pod before, but can you talk to us a little bit about Mike, what you saw and what you loved about him in Phoenix, and then the way you've seen, you know, him grow since then?
Yeah, I mean, I think Mike's a brilliant basketball coach. You know, we weren't a great defensive team. I think he took a bad rap for that, but we didn't have great defensive players. I mean,
right.
You were a good defensive player. I played hard. I think people look back and like, oh, I didn't even try, or I wasn't a good defender. And it kind of takes on a life of its own. I played hard. That wasn't a strength for me.
Right.
I was probably exhausted from the burden at the other end. And two, I just wasn't strong enough or physical enough to really, you know, make people feel me at that end of the court. And then you had Amari that wasn't a great defensive player. And we also played in an era where rim protectors were so valued. And so we went without a rim protector and tried to play fast. And so it was like, I thought Mike made decisions that were best for our team, but they weren't traditional decisions. So the media found that it was an easy narrative in a sense. So I think Mike's brilliant. I think he struggles sometimes being confrontational with his players. And I think that he's found, you know, Mike knew defense. I think Mike just was like, this group is not necessarily, no matter how much time we spend on it, gonna, you know, it doesn't have the pieces to be great defensively. So I think he departed from really trying to beat us over the head with that. And maybe that was a mistake, maybe not. But I think overall, he made an unbelievable basketball team that had a chance to win. We were very unlucky. We were also a little bit ahead of our time. And, you know, we played in an era where we weren't all the way in. We weren't hoisting tons of threes by today's standards. But we also were playing against teams that, you know, had Tim Duncan at the rim, or the Lakers had whoever it was, Gasol, right. Bynum, Odom, you know, like we're talking about some really big teams in a game that was a lot slower.
A year that you and Raja and Mike were close to breaking through, 2007, how much did you sell the Robert Horry hip check? And is the ensuing sequence and suspensions the biggest what if of your career?
Yeah, I mean, there were some what ifs for sure. I mean, some of it's just comical now. I mean, to look back and to think, you know, the game's over. We beat the Spurs. We're going back home. Everything's looking good. And like this, whatever, less than, I don't know, seconds left. And Robert checks me into the score table. You think back and you're like, what is going, like that never, ever happens. And not only does it happen, but Boris and Amari take like two steps towards me more. Not, I don't even, I mean, maybe Amari, but I know Boris wasn't trying to fight.
Right.
They were seeing if I was okay. You know what I mean?
And he so, might have been going to check on Tony.
Yeah, exactly. Could have been over there asking him if he could have a, you know, fat bottle of red tonight or something. But he's, you know, like it's this, and then they get suspended. We go home. We're already a small team. We're missing like our two biggest guys. And, you know, we hang on and we were leading that game the whole way until the last minute and lose. And, you know, just, it's like anecdotally, it's just like one of those things that happen. Overall, though, I think we take responsibility. I look back at it and say, you know, I could have played better. I could have made a couple more plays. And, you know, I'm sure some of our teammates could feel the same way. And we didn't get it done. I mean, that, the reason we love sports is because one team wins and one team loses, you know. And I never personally won. And so I'm on that side of the ledger. And that's what makes sports great. We can't all win. I got to stomach that. I got to take that with me. And that's... tough to swallow sometimes. At the same time, it's like I know I gave it everything I had.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I never got one either, but like you can't take away the blood, sweat, tears, the memories, the experiences. Like they're there. That's what I mean. It's a journey, right? It's life. I want to switch gears though, bro. Like we've talked a lot of sports, and I know you've got a ton of other interests. So, you know, talk to me about like the production company and other things you got going on, man. It's been a minute.
We've got a 6-picture deal with Paramount. No, I'm just kidding. I hate this guy who's like, you know, just comes on here acting like he's whatever. But, yeah, we're having a lot of fun. We're enjoying it. We're doing, film, television, and really leaning a lot towards digital content, which is a lot of fun. And I think obviously everyone realizes a lot of content is going. This performance out of Luca right now. He won't let me put him down. He won't join the conversation. So.
It's all good.
So it's been a lot of fun. I guess one of the fun projects for, you know, for this call is that we acquired the life rights to Pistol Pete Maravich from his wife Jackie, and we're going to try to make a feature film about his life. So a dramatic
cool.
film. So that's exciting for me as, you know, as a point guard and somebody that loves to tell stories. You know, it's an incredible story looking back on Pete. It's really a father and son story. So really excited about that. But yeah, tons of stuff going on and really, you know, other than the four kids, that's where I spend most of my time.
So you may not know, you might not remember this, right? You had a shoe that came out. What'd they call it that year? It was like Stitched Together.
The Trash Talk.
The Trash Talk. We did a commercial for that. Do you remember my cameo in that?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
Did you have a wig? Or did you
it was dope. Big Fu Manchu mustache, and I had to give, like, the big, like, evil eye. So anyway, if you remember it, just keep that in mind when it's time for the casting on the Pete Maravich joint. Let me get a little cameo. What else?
That's a good call, actually. We should get a bunch of the old guys and cameos playing against Pete or playing around.
Yeah.
The reality is, though, I cringe a little bit at sports action and sports film, so... Yeah. We'll try to stay away from as much basketball as possible.
Your experience with Steve Kerr goes way back. I know you guys spent time together, you know, just away from the sport, like life, just you know, surfing and hanging out. And, you know, I know it's had to be pretty cool for you to be a part of what's going on out there in Golden State. I've talked to you about it a little bit. Can you kind of explain, like in a nutshell, like what your relationship is to Steph and Clay and the guards out there? Because, you know, I wonder what my career would have been like had I had somebody like you that was around, you know, to be in my ear and just sit down and have conversations with me. I didn't have the benefit of that. So it's got to be just so fruitful for them.
Yeah. Well, thanks. First of all, Stevie Kerr is just a great human being. Very intelligent person. Great competitor. Has a great, obviously, pedigree with not only his parents and who are educators, but playing for Phil and Pop, being a champion, and all those things, playing with Michael and Timmy and all the different guys that he played with. But he just gave me a great opportunity. I mean, this is a year before I retired. He's like, when you're done, I want you to be a part of what we're doing. And he gave me like total freedom to come when I wanted. He's like, just try to come up a few days a month. And so it's a perfect opportunity for me. I'm not ready to jump all the way in. I mean, maybe I'll never be, but to still be involved and to learn as much as to have an impact. So, it's nice to be around this organization and to try to figure out how he leads, the dynamics and walking through with him, like from a top level, even like core values and how that frames your approach and your decisions. And that was, I think an education for me. But as far as working with the guys, I work with, Steph and Clay are so good. There's not a lot, for me to do, but I definitely have been able to talk to them from time to time or, worked with Clay a little bit on the court with Steph more just, I sit there and rebound as every ball goes in the hoop, and then once in a blue moon, we'll talk about a subject, because he's just kind of a savant. Not that he's not a thinker, but he just plays and just has such incredible technique and he's very instinctive, which is, beautiful. So sometimes we'll have a talk about certain scenarios, but, he's just so good. And funny enough, I developed a relationship with Kevin Durant before he came to the Warriors. So when he came, it was more of a natural fit for us to work together. So when I'm up there, I really train Kevin, but I'm there as a resource, and I'll work with Pat McCarr once in a while with Clay. And like I said, I just watch Steph's balls go through the basket and chuck them back out to him. But it's a great environment. And Stevie Kerr, obviously, the hardest thing is that he's gone through a really tough, tough time physically for the last 2.5 years, whatever it's been, where he's still not better. And so every day he's kind of fighting something that, in a sense we've all forgotten about, but he still has to live with it. And he once described it as having like a terrible hangover all the time. And we forget, we forget every day that that's what he's living with. And that's no fun.
Yeah, that's brutal. So Kevin Durant, the last time I saw KD, one of our throwbacks from Dallas was working with him a lot, Adam Harrington. Is he still out there working with KD?
Yeah, so Adam is an assistant coach and player development director, I believe, for the Brooklyn Nets.
Okay.
He worked with Kevin, and that's how I met Kevin. He wanted me to work with him.
Right.
So that was 4 years ago, 5 years ago now. I can't remember. And then Adam worked for a year for OKC and left. But him and Kevin are still tight, but that's how Kevin and I became in contact, and we stayed friends. And basically, it's just like a natural fit to work through. A lot of things he taught, he learned from like Dirk's coach, who I learned a lot from, or things that I might have done in my career. So there's a common thread in there. And so we've just continued it and just tried to work with him and help him a little bit. I mean, he's such an incredible player, but there's still upside to him. And
that's incredible.
It's amazing to watch him. When he's at his best, like last year in the finals, I think he is as good as there is in the world. I mean, he's as good as LeBron at that level. But the rest of the year, he has his ups and downs at times, but he is still, like, on his worst day, is a top five NBA player, but at his best, he's the best player out there. So it's been fun to work with him, and it's been fun to kind of see what ways that he can improve. And he loves the game, so it's always fun to work with people that love the game.
Last question before we let you go. We're going to do some superlatives in a second, but I want to let you go because I know Luca's ready for daddy to be daddy, but Dirk, I got to talk about him because, I got a brief moment there with you guys, in Dallas. And, I always, when I talk about you, I always talk about the work that you put in. And like, I try to explain it to my kids and anyone who will listen about like the tireless, like type of work that you put in with Rick and I was a gym guy, but I could never be in the gym more than you. And Dirk was that kind of guy. So like, I guess I watch Dirk now and it looks really painful. Because I know what I feel like getting up in the morning. How long do you imagine like Dirk does it? Have you had any conversations with him about that? Or
I think that should be his last. I haven't really necessarily. we had a brief chat about it. If I had to read between the tea leaves and from what he said, I'd say next year would be his last for sure. And I would say that, you know, that I guess he's announced he's coming back. So I believe, so I think that was probably even a tough decision, but you know, again, when it comes to the end, when it's gone, it's gone. So why not, you know, why not even take a victory lap and experience it all? So, I got a chance to play with him and obviously for 6 years and tireless worker, loves basketball. I mean, really, really loves basketball. And so he deserves everything that's come his way. You know, he's put himself in the conversation as one of the best players to ever play the game. He's a great closer, a champion, an all-star like 12,000 times. And, you know, he deserves it because he really came to the United States and was super green and intimidated. And, you know, for me, the number one predictor of success, you know, is resilience, toughness, grit. And, you know, he came here and he wondered if he'd have that because he was intimidated and he was, you know, he did look out of sorts. And so to have the grit and toughness to keep going and keep learning, keep pushing and never take his foot off the gas. And then to become like a closer where you're carrying a franchise to championships or to a championship. I mean, that's the ultimate kind of, success story. So hats off for sure.
So, Steve, we do this next part of the show. It's called Superlatives. We do this with every guest. This is where we like to have a little bit of fun, and we can run through these pretty quickly. So, first up, what year did you have your best hair?
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that I had a good year, to be honest. I felt bad. I look at the shape of my two boys' heads, and I just shake my head. I mean, these guys are in for a rough go at the barber. But I had multiple redos. I never really took them seriously. I should have. My best hair, I mean, maybe the mullet. I don't know. There was a time there that it was pretty mullet-ish. I'd say it's unique. Right. Let's put it that. It's unique.
All right. Let's see. Let me pick one. All right. Which teammate was the best high five receiver of your career?
Well, I maybe overdid it with the high five. So, best high five receiver. God, that's a good question. Kobe Bryant. What's so funny?
Wait, Kobe. What's so funny? Yeah, okay. What's so funny? I got you. I got you. Hey, was it? Wait. All right. Look, forget this prelude. Was it true that Kobe would come out like, did he get massages the whole time during shoot around? Like, when you were there, was there any truth to like, he was so like in tune with his body that he had it down to us to like, this is what he did every morning. He got a massage during shoot around. He'd come out. He'd listen for a few minutes. Like, what was it like playing with him? All right. Scrap the question. That was a dumb question. What was it like playing with him? Seriously. Because like,
I mean,
go ahead. Go.
What were you going to say? I want to hear what you're going
to
say.
I always kind of regret, like, I had a chance to go there late. Like, it was for the minimum, and I didn't want to play for the minimum at that point. But the point was, I would have liked to have seen how he worked and, like, what day-to-day life was like with Kobe.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm not really sure what, like, how the rest of his career was, right? Later in your career, you spend so much time working on your body. He may have been in the training room getting massages during walkthroughs and shoot-arounds. But you know, as I think Jay-Z said, there's levels to this shit. Yeah. So I, you know,
yeah, 100. Yeah,
definitely did what he had to do. And, you know, I didn't see him work on the court as much as I would have expected, but he definitely, you know, was very thorough with his body and trying to, you know, be prepared to play. So, it's a weird one, right? Like to see someone at year, whatever it was, 16, 17, 18, is probably going to be a lot different from seeing them at 1, yeah. 7, 14 even. So, but, you know, he's such a demonstrative personality. You know, he's like the alpha of alphas. And that's what I saw.
Yep, no doubt.
Random question.
Was that bland enough?
Yeah. You like, skirted around that nice
Twitter page.
Well done.
I got like right, you know, picked up by everyone in the country.
Random question. Do you pay attention to like how much your name is dropped in rap lyrics?
I'm aware. I don't.
Like, which one do you prefer? Really, like, Migos, Peekaboo, or Gucci Mane? Hold that thought.
you got to tell them the.
Do you know the lyric? Do you know this? I don't know if I should say that.
You know what? I'm a bit. If you haven't noticed, I'm a bit of an old head. So I didn't. I'm not that. Did you say Migos?
Migos.
Migos.
Yeah.
Peekaboo. He says they called me Samari the way I chopped the top. Steve Nash. I passed the rock. Or Gucci Mane. And Hold That Thought says, see my vet pass like a Steve Nash pass. Stay loyal like the fans of the Utah Jazz. Yeah, I had to read those like so clearly.
Bro, go with Nelly, bro. Go with Nelly. Go with Nelly, bro.
I mean, I honestly, it's like I like it. It's cool because, you know, when I growing up on the West Coast of Canada, did not think I would creep into the lyrics of a single rapper. So it's cool, and I appreciate the love, or I appreciate having a last name that rhymes with Cash.
I feel like the answer is Gucci, Cash. By the way. You should just go forth with All right. I'll give you it.
Last one, bro. Life dependent on it. Former teammate to win a game of horse. Who you taking?
Raja.
Yeah, right.
I think I have to go with Dirk.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that thing's I would say that thing's, that meets all SEC regulations. Yeah.
All right, bro. Look, we're not going to take any more of your time, man. I hear, you know, Luca's been more than accommodating. Dude, we appreciate you taking the time. Hope the event's great. This weekend, and love to the family. Thanks for coming on, bro. We got to do it again soon sometime. Steve Nash.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Can I just say I miss my guy, Belly?
Yeah, buddy. Hey, but I didn't get it.
Come on. Can I get a West Coast trip out of you once a decade?
I owe you one. I owe you like five of them. Yeah, it's happening. This summer, we're coming out. You got some spare beddies?
We need to come out.
You got some spare bedrooms?
You guys got to come to the crib. We build a house. We need all the bells.
Oh,
Cindy God. Greenman. Everybody, come to the house.
All right, bro.
Come to the house.
Done.
Chop it up. We'll barbecue.
Let's do it.
Do it.
All right, brother.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.